hey, how are you?
Great to hear.
Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable.
Like a drink?
Sure.
There you go.
Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin?
Welcome to another Tech Lounge with me, Christian Chiller. We're getting deep down and developer this episode. And I have Simon Ritter from Azul. And we talk about, okay, you ready for this? The JDK, the latest version of the JDK, which is version 26, the Java Developers Kit. I don't normally kind of cover language releases, but I thought this was interesting. There were a few changes that were worth talking about. And also, I was interested in talking about a language that is quite well established, is quite mature, and maybe developers are less excited about it, and how you can continue to maintain interest and enthusiasm in language changes when a language reaches that kind of stage in its lifespan. So it was a good conversation. And before I begin, I cannot think of a better sponsor for this episode when we talk about Java development than Tower. It's a Git graphical user interface. If you're a developer, you know exactly what Git is. If not, though, it's a way to manage changes on code, text, also images. But Git can sometimes be a little confusing. So it's a user-friendly graphical interface for macOS and Windows. Head on over to go.christianchiller.com/tower. Okay. Simon, how are you doing this afternoon?
Yeah, I am very well. Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Good, good, good. Now, we're here to talk. I don't really do like release things that much, I suppose, because there's a lot.
Especially with Java.
Well, and that's the thing. I guess I've been getting these messages from your team for a while, and it was kind of something I wanted to actually talk about because, especially with older languages in this day and age, it's sometimes easy to forget that they're still going and they still have new announcements and things like that. So maybe let's just go back very, very quickly. I would hope that most people listening know what Java is, but you know, what's the general health check of the language at the moment?
Yes, yes. So, I mean, as you say, I'm sure everybody in the audience has heard of Java. It's been around for a long time. So like you said, it's a mature language. I mean, we're 30 years in now. Mm. In fact, it'll be 31 come this May. And I think it's interesting, certainly from our perspective as a company that focuses purely on Java, that the platform is still evolving at a fairly high speed. Mm. And if I describe that, basically since JDK 9, which would have been 2018, if I remember rightly, we switched to the idea of a time-based release schedule rather than a feature-based release schedule. Mm. And that's why we've seen two releases every year since then,
okay,
which is why we've suddenly jumped from JDK 9 back in 2018 to JDK 26.
I was wondering, yeah.
in 2026.
Yeah.
So there's very clearly laid out, there is a release every March and every September. And the idea is that, as I said, we're driven by time rather than features. Mm. So if a feature is ready, it goes into the release. If it's not quite ready, then we can just delay it till the next one, which is only 6 months down the road. And that seems to have worked extremely well. Mm. We've seen a lot more features being added to the platform over those last sort of 8 years than we really saw in the preceding, well, certainly 8-10 years even. And that has worked very well because it has allowed the platform to evolve in a very natural way. Mm-hmm. One of the great advantages of having this fixed time and faster release schedule is that we can also deliver what are called preview features or incubator modules.
Yeah.
And that's where what we're doing is we're saying, okay, we've got this idea for a feature. We've completely developed it. So it's not like a beta test. It's not like a partially completed thing. But we want to make sure that developers are happy with it. So let's release it as a preview feature. Let people try it out. Give some feedback. If there are things that still need to be changed, then we've still got a chance to do that before we fix it as part of the standard. And again, that has proved to be very successful because it has allowed us to modify features a little bit to fit more what the developers actually want. And in one case, we even had a situation where a feature was released as a preview feature. Feedback was received. It wasn't actually that good. And so they decided, okay, let's just take that out altogether. We'll just remove it completely and we'll have another go at it later on.
Yeah. Okay. And is that, I mean, one thing we should clarify here, I suppose this might make a bit more sense. So just to understand, it's been a little while since I've done much Java development. Is there, because we talk about JDK, is there a difference between a language release and JDK, which to me is more like developer kit? Are they two different things or are they the same?
No. So the way that Java works is that you have what we call the Java platform, and that consists of the JDK, if you like. So that's the JVM, the thing that actually runs your applications.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then there's a set of tools around that.
Yeah.
Now, the specification, which is where Java is a little bit different to other open source projects, if you look at Linux, for example, it's different in the sense that it does have a formal specification. Mm. That's developed through what's called the JCP or the Java Community Process. Each version of Java has a JSR or Java Specification Request. Yeah. And the important thing about that is it consists of three different things. So there's the Java Virtual Machine Specification, so a full definition of what the JVM is and what it does, the Java Language Specification, which gives you the details about the syntax of the Java language and how that works, and then a definition of all the class libraries which are included in the JDK, so the standard libraries. In addition to that, you've then got a thing called the TCK, or Technology Compatibility Kit. And that's like 150,000 tests that you can run against an implementation and say, does this actually match the specification?
This is what you get for a 30-year-old language, I suppose.
Isn't it? Yes.
just to wonder, because I wouldn't mind talking a little bit more commercially how your company and how, you know, some other companies involved in Java interact with each other. But from the kind of feature previews, are these done in the community? Are they decided in a community and then they're kind of decided not to be worked on by a community if they don't work out so well? Or
it's sort of the community, but I would say that the bigger decisions are made through the open source project, which is the OpenJDK.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So all the decisions about which features, which things are going in, which things are not going in, are made through the OpenJDK.
Yeah.
Now, let's be open about this. OpenJDK. Let's be open about this. The controlling interest in OpenJDK is primarily Oracle engineers.
Okay.
So there's people like Brian Gertz, Mark Reinhold, and so on, who really control the overall direction, but with a lot of input from the community. So there's nothing to stop people contributing ideas in the form of what are called JDK enhancement proposals or JEPs.
Yeah.
And then Oracle will, the OpenJDK governing body will then decide whether those things go in.
Yeah. And just like last time I looked at OpenJDK, I didn't think it was attached to Oracle. So is that just that it just happens to be that a lot of the engineers they happen to work on and is not completely related to non-open, but blah, blah, blah.
It's a little bit of a difficult sort of thing to describe, really, because Oracle own the Java trademarks. So when they acquired Sun Microsystems back in 2010, Sun was a company that created Java initially. They contributed OpenJDK to make it an open source project. But when they did that, they maintained a high level of control over the project. So they have the OpenJDK governing board, and the governing board was controlled by Sun. So when Oracle acquired Sun, they took control of the OpenJDK governing board. So essentially, yes, it is open source, so you can access it, but the overall control, if you think it's like, again, using Linux as an analogy, Linus has overall control of the project, so somebody has to. And it's Oracle through their engineers who work in the OpenJDK that have overall control.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Linux is the best example in some respects. Maybe something like that's also not good because MySQL is also not open anymore, is it?
Really? No,
because Linux isn't really owned by a company either, is it? So. Postgres. I don't know. There's numerous examples where you have a preponderance of developers working for one company, and you know technically speaking, there's vested interest, but they're also, they have two hats that they can move around. And anyway. Okay, before we, I'd just like to get a little bit more of the health check on the language. We kind of wandered down this path, but how, you know, it's very easy sometimes when you look at language popularity charts and listings and things to always focus on the new buzzy because that's what kind of gets shown on charts. But often, I think one of my favorite stats is like in JavaScript, jQuery is still huge, but no one talks about it anymore. Java has kind of got this reputation for being mostly an enterprise and, it's just sort of legacy enterprise, blah, 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 blah. I'm not even sure if it's massively used on Android anymore with the advent of something like Kotlin. Mm-hmm. But, you know, where is it being used now? Is that enterprise hat well received? Is that honest? Or is it also still something that people in uni learn and stuff like that?
Yes. I think you're absolutely right with what you kind of surmised there. Like you said, it used to be big on Android because when Google kind of went down that path, they used Java initially for the whole Android thing, and then they adopted Kotlin. So it's definitely not used much there nowadays. But really, the popular area for Java usage is the enterprise.
Yeah,
and you could kind of point at that because of the JVM. And it's one of those things which it doesn't have to be Java that is compiled to run on top of that. So you do see languages like Kotlin, Scala, Clojure, various other ones that can be compiled into bytecodes. But it's really the JVM which gives the Java platform its popularity. And the reason for that is that it has this ability to scale massively. And if you look at places where people have started using, you know, something that's a sort of new shiny ball language, and they've tried to apply that, great, start off small. Once they start scaling up to bigger numbers, then they have to switch, and they often switch to using the JVM and writing their applications in Java or Scala or whatever. Yeah. I mean, Twitter, as was, now X, is a great example of that. They started off with, I can't actually remember what, it might have been Ruby.
I know that for a fact. Yes, it was.
They started off using Ruby. And then that didn't scale to the level that they wanted to. So then they switched to using the JVM and writing a lot of it in Scala and Java.
Yeah.
And certainly if I look at the customers that we deal with in terms of like big customers, pretty much any medium enterprise upwards, if you've got a few hundred employees upwards, you're going to be using Java somewhere in your state. And that is because of that scalability. It's because of the rock solid reliability that you get with it. People just know that it's going to work. So you're right that there's a lot of legacy software there, 30 years of history. So there's a lot of legacy software there. I mean, for us as a company, we still support JDK 6 and JDK 7,
which goes
like 20 years back now. And we still have customers who want to continue using JDK 6 and JDK 7 because they're running an application.
Yeah.
It isn't broken, so why fix it? Why change it to a newer version?
Yeah. So this is interesting. Now we kind of come to the point of the conversation with JDK 26 and there's new features. Before we talk about those, when you're in that kind of environment, you know, what's the adoption of new features like?
It's pretty quick. I mean, one of the things you have to understand about the way that Java gets not released, but supported is that, and again, I'm going to use Linux as my analogy. So if you want to use Linux, you're very unlikely to go to linux.org, download all the source code and build it yourself.
Yep.
You use a distribution. So you've got Red Hat, Ubuntu, and so on. The same thing applies with Java. So you've got OpenJDK as a source code, but then you've got different distributions. Now, the primary one, you know, I'll put my hands up and say the primary one is Oracle because that came from Sun, and lots of people have used that in the past. But since about 2019, we've seen a proliferation of distributions of OpenJDK.
Mm.
And that was primarily because Oracle changed the licensing terms of their JDK. It went from being completely free to suddenly they wanted people to pay for it. And that led to people looking for alternatives.
Yeah.
So we have a distribution from Amazon called Coreto. Microsoft even have their own, which I find quite entertaining given the history of Microsoft and Java in the long past. You've got people like Red Hat who provide a distribution on there. Red Hat Enterprise Linux. There's one called Temarin from Adoption, which is part of the Eclipse Foundation. Obviously, we have our own called Zulu. It's part of Platform Core. And there's others. So there is this proliferation. And then people have this choice over which one to use. But the important thing that I need to come back to is the fact that these distributions don't have long-term support for all releases. Because we have 6 months between a release. It just isn't practical to provide extended maintenance and support for all of those. So certain ones have been nominated long-term support releases, kind of like the Ubuntu idea. Mm. That was initially set up by Oracle. They decided which ones are LTS releases. Thankfully, everybody who provides a distribution has followed the same numbering and the same versions that are LTS. But what that means is that if you want to deploy into an enterprise environment where you do need that extended maintenance and support, then you're most likely going to be using an LTS release rather than a non-LTS release. Yeah. If we look at JDK 26, the one that's just coming out, that one is a non-LTS release. JDK 25, obviously September last year, that one was an LTS release.
Okay.
The next one will be JDK 29. The one before that was JDK 21. So literally every four JDKs.
So every two years then, I guess.
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Okay. And I'm actually just looking up on my installer now, but often OpenJDK gets installed as part of something else. So the notion of distributions of languages is, might be a bit strange to kind of the more independent developer, but it's not that crazy. I've had companies that distribute versions of Node, for example, on the podcast before. But how do you differentiate between an LTS for a language? And also, is it like Linux? Does it largely remain? Does your distribution remain open as well, or not, or? It depends, or
yes. So, I mean, the way that we differentiate between, because, like I say, everybody kind of starts from the same starting point, which is OpenJDK, and we build that, and then we run the TCK to make sure that everything is as it should be, even though we're building from the same source code. But the idea is that all these distributions are functionally identical. There really is no difference between them at all. So you can simply install one OpenJDK distribution or another, run your application, and it will not behave any differently at all. Mm. That's the really good side of having multiple distributions with a test kit, is you've got this high level of confidence that you can move from one to the other without having to change anything. How we differentiate between them comes down to the sort of, again, using Linux, the sort of Red Hat model, which is where you've got support and maintenance that you can provide around that. So if we take Temarin, for example, which is the free build from Adoption, they do not provide any support. There's if you've got a problem with it, you can log a support on their like sort of bug database, but there's no guarantee it will get fixed, when it will get fixed or anything like that. With ones like ours, then we have an SLA. We sell a commercial contract to people so that if they want that idea of maintenance and support, they can get that with defined qualities to it. And we will commit to supporting a version until a certain date. So again, you can plan for that. You know, JDK 8, for example, at the moment is going to be supported until the end of 2030. Mm-hmm. So there's things like that. That's how we differentiate between them.
Okay. We're getting very close to who you are. We'll be talking about the company and stuff like that. But with regards to new features in JDK 26, the ones that are more obvious to me, I love the fact the end of the applet API. I am old enough to remember applets, and the fact that it was still supported is actually quite amazing in itself. But then when you say that there are people still running Java, JDK 6, et cetera, I guess it's not that crazy, but did any browser support?
No, this is a very much a historical artifact that's left over.
Look it up, kids.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, applets really were the very beginning of Java. That was the thing that when Java was first released, it was what was intended to as a way to deploy Java applications. It obviously fell out of favor fairly quickly. And since I think, maybe 2021, I'm thinking, maybe a little bit later than that, all of the browsers, all of the main browsers have ceased support or anything like that.
The last for the people still running Internet Explorer as well.
That's right. Yeah, the last one that still had any kind of security updates was Internet Explorer 11, but even Microsoft have stopped supporting that. Yeah. And the kind of key thing is that in JDK 11, Oracle dropped support for what's called the Applet Browser plugin.
Yeah.
So that was the extra component you needed to run applets in the browser. So since JDK 11, you haven't been able to run applets directly. Mm. They left the API in there more out of just, you know, they didn't have the time to get rid of it.
Forgot about it, probably.
Yeah. And so for a while now, it's been deprecated. Yeah. But they've finally, in JDK 26, removed it. I mean, nobody in their right mind would try and build an applet in JDK 26 or even 25 or 24, if there are many older ones.
I mean, I'm sure there's some retro people out there building things in Flash and applets, but it's a corner of the internet world. So, I mean, some of the other features here, for example, I can see things around the garbage collector, which I think is something the JVM has always was kind of one of the sort of first to make this something more automated. Reflection changes, which from my vague memories of studying Java is something I remember covering. But anything on this kind of feature list that is especially appealing to you?
There's a couple of things that are sort of interesting here. One is this idea of prepare to make final mean final, which is I think what you're referring to in terms of the reflection.
The truly final.
Truly final, yes. Because the thing about Java is, you, as a language, you have this concept of being able to mark a field as being final, with the idea that you set this value once and it can't be changed. And that's all good, because that's a very standard part of a programming paradigms. But the problem with that is that final doesn't really mean final in Java, because you've got a thing called deep reflection, which if you use that, you can actually find the field in your class and then you can change it through reflection.
Okay.
So final doesn't really mean final in the true sense. Now, the drawback to that is that it means that the JVM has to take that into account in terms of how it deals with fields in classes. And it's limited, therefore, in terms of some of the optimizations that it can apply, because it has to still take into account the fact that somebody might change that field. If we can make final really mean final, which is what this is going to do, and prevent people from changing things through deep reflection, then it will allow the JVM to be more optimizing in terms of the approach it can take with these fields. It's also related to another part of one of the changes that's coming in JDK 26, which is a thing called lazy constants.
Yeah.
That used to be called stable values.
Yeah.
Basically the same thing. They just decided to rename it. But the idea of lazy constants is that, again, it's something which can't be changed. But the reason that they want to have a different way of doing what is effectively the same thing as a final, is because with a lazy constant, you have more control over when it's initialized. With a final field in a class, you have to initialize it basically in the constructor, because if it's not initialized in the constructor or a static body, then the compiler will complain about it. With lazy constants, you have more control over when those things can be initialized, and it gives greater flexibility for developers.
Yeah.
These are all part of a bigger project called Valhalla.
Okay. That was a very final word to end on. Although I guess maybe the pun is that Val is
value.
I'm not sure. It's interesting as well, because those two items can sound kind of smallish, but I can imagine changes like that could break a lot of older applications that have relied on these sort of workarounds. And
the lazy constants is new, so that won't break anything. But yeah, making final possibly could break code, because as you say, if people have used deep reflection and they're doing some weird stuff where they're actually changing final things, for some application reason, I'm not quite sure why you would do that, then yes, it could break their code. But this is why that we have to prepare to make final mean final. We're giving people notice that this is going to happen, so you've got time to change your code if you need to.
Deep reflection and preparing for final sounds very philosophical, but okay, so we've covered this. Now let's actually talk about So Azul, yes, I have to double check sometimes how to pronounce words like this, is the name of the company, and this is the distribution that the JDK distribution you maintain. So you mentioned the Red Hat model, but we can go a little bit deeper. What do you package and sell for the Java ecosystem then?
Yeah, so what we do is, as a company, we focus purely on Java. That's all we do, but yep. Java at the platform level rather than Java at the application level.
Yeah.
So we kind of talked a little bit about this build of JDK that we call Zulu. It's yep. part of our platform, or I should just call it core product now,
yep.
Which is direct replacement for Oracle. It's no different to what Oracle does. It's no different to what Amazon Coreto does or anything like that. So it is a drop-in replacement. What we're offering there in terms of the selling point is that it's a cheaper alternative to Oracle and gives you exactly the same in terms of yep. support, maintenance, and so on. Another part of our business is where we take OpenJDK as our starting point, but rather than just building it in exactly the same way without any changes, we do make changes internally to the JVM.
Okay.
Specifically, we change garbage collection. We change some of what's called the JIT compilation, which is yep. the just-in-time compiler yep. that generates code as the application is running. What that allows us to do is to provide something which is functionally identical. So the behavior of the application will be the same, but performance-wise, we can differentiate. So we can offer a garbage collector which is truly pauseless, which eliminates the issues of latency associated mm-hmm. with garbage collection. And then because we can change the way that the code that's compiled comes from a different compiler, we can apply more heavy optimizations. And that allows us to get higher throughput. So yeah. to give you sort of an example of that, if people are using Kafka, which is a JVM-based messaging system, mm. if you just change the JDK underneath and use our Prime JVM or Zing, because we can more heavily optimize the code, we can actually deliver up to 53% more transactions per second just by changing the JVM. So nothing else, and you get 53% yeah, more transactions.
It's interesting you mentioned Kafka, because actually when I look at your webpage, there's a bunch of these a lot of Apache mm. projects, but also some others that are, you know, longer running JVM-based projects that are quite popular. Apache Spark. Yep. Elasticsearch, Solr, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm assuming you're packaging these all together because they are commonly used
yeah,
together.
Yeah, we don't actually package those things together.
Okay.
What we're doing is providing alternative runtime that sits yeah. underneath them. So yeah. as you've highlighted, you know, you've got a lot of these Apache infrastructure projects. Yeah. So it's Cassandra, Spark, yeah. Elasticsearch, and so on, Hadoop. They're all written in Java. They're yeah. all Java-based languages so that they all run on top of the JVM. What we can do is to allow people to get better throughput, lower latency for those applications without changing any of their code.
Yeah.
And the great thing about that is, you see, even if you're not in a performance-constrained situation where you say, okay, well, my application runs fast enough, but if you're in the cloud and you can get more transactions per second with the same hardware, mm. then you can provision smaller instances or less instances in a cluster, and that will actually save you money on your cloud bill because you're using less resources. So it's not just about improving okay, performance yeah. to get better performing applications. Yeah. It's about cloud cost optimization as well. A couple of other things that we do, we've just acquired another company called Pyara. And Pyara is a company that supports the sort of next level up in terms of Java, if you like.
Yeah.
Because there are these things called app servers, which was part of the Java Enterprise Edition. So servlets, EJBs, and all those good things. Mm. And Pyara provides, again, a supported version of the open source project, which was called Glassfish.
Okay, yeah. I think I saw the logo of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Glassfish was the sort of, or is the open source reference implementation for, now it's called Jakarta EE rather than Java EE, because Oracle has the trademark. And so when they yeah. contributed it to the Eclipse Foundation, they didn't want to call it Java EE. So it's called Jakarta EE, but it is still Java EE. So we've acquired them. And so that's allowing us to provide that next level up in terms okay. of support and maintenance around an application server.
It does make a vague sort of sense because you have this kind of very green and blue colors and then suddenly there's orange. And
exactly, yes.
So it's an acquisition. Yeah, the names are all very, Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
And
the last part of what we do is we've got this thing called the intelligence cloud. And that's where we've got a kind of bit that sits on top of our Java runtimes. And the idea behind that is to say, okay, well, because we build these Java runtimes, although there is certainly the core is exactly identical and Prime has different performance. But what we thought is, well, why don't we take advantage of the fact that we can extract more information from this JVM because we have control over how it's built. And what we've done is said, okay, let's use the information about things like the class loader that tells us exactly which classes are being loaded by an application. And we can use that to determine where this code that's not being used. Because if you see which code is being used, then you can say, well, this code isn't being used. Run that over a period of time, and that will identify to you where there's potentially dead code in your application.
Yeah.
If you've got libraries that aren't being used anymore because you've developed it over a number of years, then you may stop using a particular part of the application, and we can help you identify that and then remove that code.
Yeah.
And then the last part is what we call JVMI, which is JVM inventory. So, because this is something that people struggle with a lot, is identifying where they've got Java installed, where it's being used, what it's being used for.
So for
JVMI
updates,
just says, okay, because now you're using a JVM which has our code in it, we can identify exactly what that JVM is being used for, keep track of it, and so on.
Okay. So this is kind of the first one, I guess, is the observability side.
Yeah.
The second one, I suppose, is kind of supply chain.
Administration kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And as far as you know, so JDK 27, what is something that you're looking forward to?
I'm not sure about 27. Okay. Let me just have a quick look.
You don't, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, there's only one JEP that has been that has been identified for JDK 27 so far, We will have to wait and see what actually comes out of that.
It's interesting, I suppose, because it's a sort of tightish in terms of the open community. Maybe sometimes it's a bit of a mystery to see what's going to get accepted or not, even though it's every 6 months.
Which
feels like a short period of time, but
it is, and it's even shorter than you think it is, because of course a 6 month release means that we have to have a code freeze probably after 4 months.
Yeah.
So what we'll see is that, although there's only one JEP that's been submitted or accepted so far in JDK 27, as soon as JDK 26 comes out, within a couple of weeks, there'll be a sort of flurry of JEPs that will be accepted, and then we'll have a clearer picture of what's going on with 27.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, I mean, OpenJDK, I guess people could just install however they normally install.
Yes.
Which is a variety of ways. And for Azul, it's azul.com. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming you're probably one of these. Is your distribution available for anyone to the open version of it? Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
So, yeah. so we have both what we call a community version and a supported version.
Yeah.
Community version is free, but obviously doesn't come with any support.
Yeah. And of course, if anyone is interested in the more business side, then I suppose it's a talk to us.
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Great. Thank you very much.
So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianschiller.com or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianschiller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.